Welcome to the Hairdryer Treatment Podcast, powered by Kevin Grogan Soccer, Soccer Coffee, and much more. Five, four, three, two, one. Great to have Joe Bean back with us today. Joe, you've been a regular guest. Thanks for coming again today.
Pleasure to be here.
So we're a bit later on, we're going to talk about the legendary Bill Shankly from Liverpool. A lot of people will know who he is, and maybe some of our American listeners won't know, but we'll give an insight into that. Super Bowl Sunday, let's start with that.
I know it was a very low scoring game. I heard a lot of disappointment after the game. So I didn't really get to watch it, but certainly saw the results and the disappointment in many fans.
My disappointment was the halftime show. I don't know much about the game, but obviously Super Bowl Sunday is great socially. But the halftime show was so poor. Maroon 5, it was absolutely brutal. Usually you'd expect like big acts, you know. Over the years, you had The Clash, Michael Jackson, Rolling Stones, you know, even more recently Beyonce, just absolute legends. And I just thought it was so poor.
Ordinary.
Yeah, very poor.
How did the performance go? How did he sing?
Just poor. Just, it was just kind of cheesy, kind of pop. And he was trying very hard to be, you know, a kind of edgy rock star, which I don't think he is. That's just my opinion. I thought it was poor.
He's a judge, isn't he, on The Voice?
Yeah.
I'm not a huge fan, but a couple of the songs that I was familiar with, I did like the sound of them, but I did catch some of his performance. I didn't think it was great.
Obviously, he's talented, not debating that, but it was just so kind of, I don't know what they call it, bubblegum.
Disappointing. It's a game more so, a very low-scoring game. Two teams, very organised, well-prepared from a defensive standpoint. In the end, it might have been a bit of a flop. Not for the winners, though.
Yeah. It's a massive day, though, isn't it, in America? Just for our listeners outside of America, back home in Ireland, it's like a World Cup final, really, isn't it?
It's a massive game. It's a great day. Everybody's out visiting friends. Everybody's out watching the game. There's barbecues. There's beers. It's a big, long day. And it's a massive day for the country. Like the World Cup, as you said, like an FA Cup, the last game of the season, but even bigger probably here.
Yeah. What about title race, Premiership? Very interesting. Yeah. We're obviously going to talk about Shankly later, who was Liverpool. Liverpool are right up there. Can they win it?
Of course they can win it. Now, there's talk of them losing their nerve a little bit, that they can only get so far, and when it comes to, you know, crunch time, that they'll flop, but I don't know about that. They're still there. They're still in the hunt. They're the team to beat, although City could go level this week, so we'll see. But yeah,
Spurs are still in with a shout.
Spurs are definitely in with a shout. I have a feeling, though, it could be between City and Liverpool, but Spurs are only a handful of points off the race, so I wouldn't write them off.
Lots of games to play. It's exciting, a lot of games, and you know, every week there's something going on.
Without a doubt, the Liverpool side, when they're on song, you're going to get a lot of entertaining football going on. The front line, very good. Midfield may not be as strong as it could be because the front line is so good. Back line, solid with Van Dijk. Great buy, by the way. City, they're not going away. And then after that, Spurs, hopefully. Well, yeah, it's a good race.
And Man United, top four, can they get it? It's going to be tough. They're having a great run with Solskjaer. I love what he's doing. I just love his positivity.
Definitely. They're now, they're now right up on Chelsea's back. They've almost, you know, it's not that Arsenal is out of it, but they've gone past Arsenal now a little bit. Good win, good bounce back there against them. I believe I'm going to say Leicester. They beat Leicester after a 2-2 tie. In their last game, that is 1-0. I believe they won. So they're back in the hunt for top four, no doubt. They definitely can do it. Why not?
His interviews are great. He's very calm.
He is.
I tell you a great story about him. I played a training game once with the first team, and he was playing, and I was on his team. And you always, you know, around the training ground, and even now you look at Solskjaer and think, like, he comes across as a really nice guy, you know, but obviously anyone at that level of playing and now management has to have a bit of a switch and a bit of a bite about them. But he got the ball and he was up front and he turned and he went running at the fullback, and I was playing right midfield in the game and I didn't overlap, and he absolutely gave me, as we call it, the hairdryer, the Ferguson hairdryer, not quite as vicious as Ferguson, but he absolutely ripped me. And I knew there was a different side to him then.
No doubt. The animal comes out when is when we play. And when you're a striker, you're sniffing and you're smelling goals. And it's down to those fine details when you're in that box. And it's just one decision, one move. And you don't get it right, you lose your chance. And
I should have overlapped him.
Well, yeah. You probably should have went around it. But maybe you were being a bit conservative, given that you were...
I was 16. I was with the big boys.
Yeah. No matter where he goes, goals are scored. He did it as a player. Early on in his career,
he was the best finisher I've ever seen live. Yeah. Like, you'd see him in training and then obviously you take it into the games, but even in training, I mean, like, he'd be scoring like 10, 12, 15 goals in a training game. Like, yeah. The players that stood out in that regard, the finishing, I always say, was Solskjaer was ridiculously good, and David Healy, who I actually played a lot with, Northern Irish player, and ended up playing for Northern Ireland senior team and doing really well. He got a hat-trick once against Spain. But I always said Healy was one of them. He just scored goals.
Yeah.
Just machines. Like, they'd go in all sorts of ways. Off their shin, off their knees, long rangers, headers, lobs, you name it. They just scored goals.
He did it right to the end of his career. He's such a great goal scorer.
Do you remember David Healy, though?
David Healy, yeah, of course, I know the name and all that, but goal scorers are just, they're special. They're just special players. They just know where to be. You know, he, you know, there's a story as well with you where when he actually signed for the club, you guys went down to watch them train, and in one of his first sessions, he banged in like something like 10 goals in training or something
ridiculous.
Like that. You just mentioned that.
I don't know if he had signed or he was just a training player at that stage. I was only 12 or something, or 11. Just naturally. You talk about your Alan Shearers, your Gary Linekers, you know, Mike Lone, you know, Robbie Fowlers. You know, it's funny because I'm trying to sign a goal scorer at the moment for the New York Shamrocks. And, you know, people say, there must be one out there. And it's like, well, they're hard to find, that kind of fox in the box. And obviously we don't pay our players. So, you know, we can't, there's one or two out there that if you paid, you might get them. But when you're looking beyond that, they're hard to find.
Well, Rashford is very good, a natural goal scorer. He shouldn't be playing anywhere else except centre forward. Lovely player. There's no shortage of goals there. Martial might knock in a few. He's got other players who can score goals. His main issues are going to be in the back line, and that's where he's going to have to, tighten up and certainly stop giving goals away. So he's got a major problem back there in the full back position. The right full doesn't really do that great position from a positional standpoint. But a great servant, young captain the other day, but he's not a defender. So when it comes to scoring goals and getting players, I hear you on trying to find strikers and all that, but he has them in abundance. You know, in your case with the Shamrocks, You have to have a goal scorer in that level. You have to.
We've had a fair few players have chipped in with goals, which has been great. But what we're talking about really is the fox in the box, the guy that's going to get you a goal in every game. He might not do anything for 90 minutes, but he'll get you a goal.
You have to have those players in your side.
Yeah.
But as far as like you know United and getting into the top four, they're certainly in the run for it. I wouldn't bet against them. In fact, I took a little look at them in the Champions League. They're going to play PSG. Fancy their chances there. But Liverpool are the team to beat. Definitely are the team to beat. And they certainly have excellent goal scorers. And their play certainly lends into the goal scoring machine that they've become. They can win games 4-3. They won their other week 4-3. So you can score against them. However, they can respond, and they've been doing so. So it's a great title. Liverpool, I think, will win it.
My money's on City, but anyway. Yeah. Okay, so what, we'll take a little break now, and we're actually going to play a little clip of the legend Bill Shankly, just to give people a taste of what he was all about. His voice and how he talked was quite unique and amazing. So we'll play that clip, and then we'll come back and get into a chat about the legend himself. Okay, welcome back. As I said, we're going to talk about the legendary Bill Shankly, who was the legendary manager, or in America, as you call it, head coach of Liverpool, one of the biggest clubs in the world. Back then in the 70s, 80s, they dominated. They won everything you can imagine. And Bill Shankly came to the club, I believe, in the 50s, Joe, was it?
1959.
Second division. Back then, what we call the Premiership was the first division, so it was first, second, third, and so on. So it was the second division back then. Club was in a mess. Facilities were awful. Team was shocking, and he changed everything, right?
He sure did. When he came in, he described Anfield as being the biggest toilet in the league. The facilities were absolutely terrible. Toilets weren't working. The place was completely falling apart. They were in the second division. It wasn't going well for them at all. And they hadn't really achieved a lot of success for many, many years. There were times when they did okay. At the outset, they did well. They did well in the 20s. They won a few titles. And then they had a lot of space in between where nothing was happening. And eventually they're in the second division, and in arrives the United one, Mr. Shankly.
But just from that clip we played there, I mean, you just listen to his voice. He was from Scotland originally, and he just had, you know, his voice was amazing. And he had this aura about him, apparently, that when he walked in the room, and you can just imagine how he motivated the players. Obviously, he did a big recruitment job, but you can just imagine how he got the whole city behind him back then.
He did. He one of the first things he said that he would do would be to make sure that everything that he had ahead of him was for the supporters. He did a great way of winning people over, an incredible speaker. But when he went to the club at first, you know, back then the manager didn't pick the team, and Shankly asked the board, "Well, then why would you be a manager if you're not picking the team?" So he went in and fought with them a little bit. It took him a couple of seasons early on. Results were okay. Took him a couple of seasons. Got them out of the second division very quickly. And then within the space of a year or two, they were winning the first division championship. That's incredible turnaround in less than, you know, 3-4 years. So instantly he's putting a stamp on everything.
But it was him that came in with the all red kit. You know, there was a famous story where he wanted all red. And he got it, and he made one of the players model it. And it was just that kind of, when the players ran out and all red, you know. And I always say, like, there is a psychological aspect to that, isn't there?
I think it was Ron Yates, a centre-half.
Big, tall.
A centre-half that he bought along with Ian St. John. And he told Yates to get the shorts on him, the red shorts, and get out there, and he wanted to take a look at him, and Yates is already a big man, and he's telling Yates, "You look 7 foot, this is it." And Ian Callahan's in the background, "We might as well go the full lash and put the red socks on as well." So sure enough, they went all red, and they haven't turned back since. That Yates was a big player that he brought into the club early on, along with Ian St. John. And once those two landed in the club, the Bill Shankly Renaissance man,
Yeah,
Bill Shankly.
He was a great recruiter because he had that. I always say with recruitment, like identifying a player is one thing. There's a skill in that. But then you got to go meet the players and you've got to convince them why. It's like at any level, whether it's, you know, amateur, professional, whatever, you have to go meet the players. And really, you're selling yourself and you're selling the club and you're selling the fans and all that. And there's an art to that. And he was the master of that.
Credible speaker. His voice alone, Phil Thompson even said it, just his voice, just listening to his voice, you could listen to it all day. The amount of conviction in what he spoke about and what he said, and he truly believed these things. When he had a player, he brought a player to the ground. The place was in a heap, dilapidated, and he's telling the player, you know, you should consider. They're standing in the middle of the pitch, and they're looking around at the facilities, and says Shankly, you should be glad that you're here, you know, looking at the state of the place right now, because the next time you see it, it's going to be a bastion of invincibility. So he just had that way meeting with people. He had that way of winning players over. He said to one player, you know, we're in the first division. I think it was Yates. And Yates said, oh, the last I read, you were in the second. He says, yeah, but when you sign, you'll be in the first. So he had a great way with speaking with players. Funny, witty, extremely confident man. And I had a swagger about him, you know, had a real swagger about him. Imagine a guy coming up to you wearing this big black coat, his hands in his pockets, and he's trying to shape like, you know, his favorite actor, James Cagney. And then he speaks. And what a speaker.
And he got the whole crowd behind him, didn't he? The cop, you know, for the people who wouldn't understand, the cop was one end of the stadium where this, you know, the real hardcore fans went, and he had a great relationship with the cop and with the fans, and he really got the whole city behind him.
Yeah, he made the people happy again. I think that's one of his big things. I think it's actually on the statue outside Liverpool. But yeah, he in that speech, he says to them, you know, I tell my players all the time, it's a privilege to play for you, and the crowd just erupts. What a speaker. A people's champion, and very much so a people's champion, a working class hero, as John Lennon sang.
Beatles, what a band.
Yeah, great band.
There was a hop in time back then, wasn't it? Like, you know, 60s. There was a lot going on, especially in Liverpool, and the Beatles were massive. Jerry and the Pacemakers, they sang You'll Never Walk Alone. They probably made it famous, and that was the anthem for the club, You'll Never Walk Alone. What a song. I mean, yeah. It's funny because people always say to me, you know, oh, you're Man United, like, how can you like Liverpool or how can you like this or that? But I just love football. I love Brian Clough, so I like Nottingham Forest. Brian Clough, another legend. We're going to talk about him in a different podcast. Bill Shankly and Liverpool and what they created. You know, you can love football, you know. I don't hate other clubs just because I have an affiliation with Manchester United, but Liverpool were a class act back then.
You know, you should know about Bill Shankly and Liverpool and the story about those two. Certainly should know the Bill Shankly story. In the 60s when he came in, 59 he landed in the club. In the 60s, still a good side, still a great side. Won leagues, won cups. Still a very, very good side. By the end of the 60s, they were past their best. And he changed the team again, bringing in the likes of Kevin Keegan. So you know, he certainly also brought in some new stuff into the game where he learned at Preston North End as a player. He brought in the likes of a five-a-side, which was unheard of. Players were out running, players were out, you know, doing their...
He was ahead of his time, training-wise, and I think he talks about things where, as coaching evolved, and now we see it in our day now, the buzzwords around all these sessions and everything we do, and I think it's absolute nonsense. Everyone's talking with buzzwords all the time. He was actually doing a lot of it. He just wasn't using the buzzwords.
Well, it's interesting also, if you know, for coaches too, he didn't believe in the FA badges. He wasn't into them at all. He didn't need one. When he was asked about his credentials, his answer was, I'm Bill Shankly. He didn't believe in all that. He didn't believe... In fact, he said, why doesn't the FA come to Anfield and I'll teach them the Bill Shankly School of Soccer? He said half of them would probably fail.
Well, it's funny you say that. I'm kind of going off topic here, but it's just interesting because when you talk about coaching badges, and, you know, I do understand the importance of them and the value in them. But also, I think some people that they do their badges, they nearly get kind of institutionalized and they nearly turn into robots, some people. They should just be in addition to your other educate forms of education in terms of going and observing games, going and observing sessions, going and talking to other football people and learning. You know, I know one person that did a badge recently over here, and I asked what was the biggest thing they learned. And the response was genuinely, they were shown the appropriate way to stand on the side of the field. That's bizarre. That's mad, isn't it? You know, when this person was all about that, I'm not blaming him, or I'm not blaming the, you know, maybe the association here, but that's mad that they're teaching people how to stand on the sideline. They talked about the Superman pose or the hands behind the back or why you shouldn't fold your arms. I mean, that's an issue, Joe, that if that's what they're teaching them.
Yeah, well,
I get myself in trouble for saying that, but it is it is the truth, right? So there's kind of, and going back to Bill Shankly, there's kind of like method behind his madness there. Like, I think he understood why badges were important, but he didn't want to get corrupted by them. And I'd agree with that. There's many things where you become institutionalized or you become like a robot.
Yeah, but he was so hell-bent on his mission. He was so keen on his way. And he was, just the confidence of the man was incredible. But he had philosophies as well. You certainly should know the Shankly story. He had philosophies on the concept of working for each other. And he was able to understand that really well. In fact, he was that kind of player. He went out and worked the socks off the entire 90 minutes and was well able to take on the workload of two or three players around him. So he did have that social kind of, humanitarian kind of an attitude, and very much influenced by that. And so when he went out to play, he played that way, and he certainly wanted that from his team. But he also instilled fitness regimes. He also instilled bouts of technical receive and pass and 2 minutes, then back into your five-a-side. He also brought in the shooting board. He brought in a lot of new ideas into the game, and he was a fitness fanatic. So, like, for example, cooldown, unheard of almost. He incorporated that into his training, where he made the players go from Anfield over to the training ground and back. And that was part of them cooling down and keeping together. So a very interesting figure in the game, not only for who he was and what he did, but also things that he implemented into the game.
He was a big believer in everyone doing the small jobs to the best of their ability. And we're going to actually play a small bit of audio here of him talking about that, and we'll come back then after.
My aim in life was, even in the army, when you went in the services during the war, you got some horrible jobs. They go you in the cookhouse to dry about 6,000 dishes, you see, and in the latrines for to clean them out. Well, if I had a job to do, even if it was scrubbing the floor, I wanted my floor to be cleaner than yours. Now, if everybody thinks along these lines and does all the small jobs to the best of their ability, that's honesty, then the world will be better and football will be better. So what we want is hard work, and no football club is ever successful without hard work.
I mean, just listening to him there, you could listen to him all day, just his voice. But let's talk, Joe, about his achievements, because he took, as we said, he took the club from kind of a struggling club, poor facilities, got them promoted, and then really, you know, took on the whole of Europe, really.
In his 15 years, I think they won up to 16 trophies, which includes another league, maybe the reserve league. But he certainly won 2-3 championships, a couple of FA Cups, and obviously the UEFA Cup. In the 60s, like I say, they were a very successful side. But in the 70s, when they brought in Kevin Keegan, Toshack, Ray Clements, they went on to win the UEFA Cup.
Did he make a comment? We might have to research this. Did he make a comment that Everton, who were the big rivals to Liverpool, obviously, but he said Everton aren't even the second best team in Liverpool,
Yeah, the two best teams in Liverpool are the first team, Liverpool, and the reserves in Liverpool.
Yeah.
In the '60s, by the way, don't forget the rivalry that they had with Everton was absolutely fantastic. I mean, it brought the whole city
it's
together.
It's a derby. It's Liverpool, Everton, Manchester United, Manchester City. They're big derbies, right?
Great, and a great Everton team too. And don't forget, it was called Everton, and there was problems with, at the beginning of the club, and the club was founded. It was Everton. And there were problems with the owner of the ground. And so they had an argument, they split, and the owner founded Liverpool. Everton went their way to Goodison Park, and they stayed in Anfield and called it.
It's
team
often
Liverpool, so.
The birth of a club is often from a fallout somewhere else.
It is.
You see it all over the place.
Very much so. But the 73 team that won the UEFA Cup was just lovely to watch. I remember that team really, really well. Steve Highway played on that team. Ian Callaghan, Toshack, Keegan, Hughes, Tommy Smith, Alec Lindsay, Ray Clemens in goal. Best keeper in the world at the time, no doubt.
English goalkeeper.
Great goalkeeper. Yeah. You know, you can't... The achievements that he's had as a manager are really, really fascinating given what he took over and what he had. In his 15 years as manager, he only used 69 players. In one season that he had, he only used 14 players, two of which didn't get many time. So he achieved an incredible amount in a very, very tight unit. For me, the early 70s was where when I started really noticing Liverpool and taking huge interest in Liverpool. Even though I was a United fan, I very much loved watching them play, especially Kevin Keegan. An absolute superstar.
But you, I mean, safe to say that Liverpool would not be where they are today without Bill Shankly. He started it all.
There's no way would Liverpool be where they are without Bill Shankly.
It's like Manchester United wouldn't be where they are today without Sir Matt Busby.
Yeah, you know, don't forget, when Bill Shankly went to Liverpool, the likes of Paisley and the likes of Fagan were already there. They were the backroom staff and another guy called Bennett, right? I believe Reuben Bennett.
And they had the famous boot room, Joe.
There you go. And so he created the boot room. Shankly created the boot room so he could bring his staff in and chat with them about the game, about tactics. And Paisley had a great mind for the game. Those guys wouldn't have been able to take Liverpool where they went. And they hadn't been. So once Shankly arrived, he just raised everyone's performance. He raised everyone thinking, having them feel they were invincible. And so that boot room became famous. And you can measure Shankly and what he did for the club when he left. Because when he left, Liverpool went on to dominate from the mid-70s into the mid-80s. Liverpool were dominating Europe. Two or three European Cups, leagues, back-to-back. And again, a lot of it was because of what Bill Shankly left behind.
But the boot room was, just for our listeners who don't know, it was literally just a boot room where every club has them, where you go in, you clean your boots, and you hang them on the walls. But he turned it into, you know, an area where all the staff would come together. They'd drink their cups of tea. They'd sit down. They'd talk football. They'd talk tactics. They'd talk about players, who they're bringing in, who they're going to play, who they're playing against. And it became a very iconic thing because they had so much success from all the chats they had in that boot room. And I think one of the legacies, you know, as you kind of touched on there, is when he did leave, the next manager, Bob Paisley, was from the boot room, and the next one was from the boot room, and so on and so on. So they really built a culture, and it was really cultivated probably in that room. Really, really interesting.
You know, going back to folklore, going back to why it's important to know the Liverpool Shankly story, I really learned that after years of coaching myself that it was so important to talk to your staff, to the other coaches, about what they see, about what needs to be done. And I used to call it, I used to say it to a good friend of mine, Mark Hopper. I used to say to Mark, let's go to the boot room. And we were so up for it. We'd go around the corner, out of the office. We had this little coffee shop. We used to go in, have our coffee, and talk about tactics, etc. And it was called our boot room time. So yeah, and I really admired that Shankly was able to have those kinds of relationships with his staff. So look what happened when he left in 73, 74. They just won the FA Cup. After that, Liverpool just dominated. Great to watch, by the way. Great team to watch. The envy of the rest of Europe, the football that they played. Pass and move. Pass and move was a big one, a big part of their motto. Shankly would have learned that as a young player, playing in the town that he grew up, in the village that he grew up called Glenbuck, I believe, in Scotland, just south of Glasgow. And in that village, it was mostly coal mining. And after the day's work, all the miners would get together and play a game. And a big part of their game was pass and move and keep it simple. And Shankly learned that stuff as a kid. But as a kid, all he knew was soccer. So you've got this person coming into Liverpool who's totally all about soccer. So yeah, he definitely had a major influence on everything in Liverpool.
It's amazing because there were so many great managers that came from Scotland. I mean, you look at Jock Stein, Celtic. You look at Alex Ferguson. You look at Sir Matt Busby. You look at Bill Shankly. What was it, do you think? And there's been many documentaries and shows about, you know, this. But they all had something in common. They were all very working class and understood the value of work ethic. That must have been one of the big reasons why they went on to be success, because they had that foundation of work ethic. And they were very sharp, intelligent people as well.
The towns that they grew up in, Shankly, for example, it was all about neighbours helping each other out. And that was a big part of how we grew up. He believed that if everybody pulled their weight in that area, that then everyone would get their just rewards. He certainly would have witnessed some local politics where it was very unionised. It was very much a trade union atmosphere going on around all the workers. So we probably would have witnessed people speaking. He also had four brothers who were also professional soccer players. It was five brothers. All five were professional players. So he was the youngest, the second youngest in the family of 10. So we would have been listening to and influenced very much so by his older brothers. And no doubt they could have held their own talking about the game. So, yeah, it is interesting when you look at those Scottish leaders. And they're not that far from each other, some of the names you mentioned there. Very similar region. Ferguson was similar kind of a boyhood. But Shankly definitely understood the powers of you know, working together as a team, and he certainly understood pretty much human behavior, and he was a great speaker, though. He was just a natural. I mean, I put him on par with he could have done anything, that guy. He could have spoke to anybody.
Being a politician.
Without a doubt. Sure, politicians were in awe of him when they visited Anfield. He was just that kind of person, an incredible presence. And just, like I said earlier on, the anointed one, the Messiah. He was looked upon as the Messiah. He said he would have been proud to be a Scouser.
There was a great story about him and Alex Ferguson. Actually, Alex Ferguson met him before a game in Anfield, and actually admits he was very much in awe of him as well. And Alex Ferguson would have been a manager at the time. And it was getting close to kickoff for maybe 15, 20 minutes. And Sir Alex said to him, "Oh, you're not going down to the dressing room." And he goes, "Absolutely not." He goes, "If I have to go down to the dressing room now and motivate them, I've done something wrong during the week." And it was just amazing how he was, you know.
His one-liners, his answers, his comebacks. Very much like the Liverpool people, who are very witty, cocky.
Great city, isn't it?
Super. Great place as far as like talent, and as far as like, you know, the people and how they're so passionate about what they get into. Football, obviously, second to none. He felt that he was very similar to the people of Liverpool, and he had them under their spell. Sure, he had the media under his spell. He'd tell the media how great they were. They loved them, and he could do that within minutes in a room. He could do it very quickly. Early on, when he met all the players, when he arrived in Liverpool, he told them all, "Listen, expect to be asked of to do things that you've never been asked before." And within a year, 24 of them were gone. He changed everything. He was like a storm coming in there. And I would say that his ending wasn't great as far as...
But just before we go into that, yeah. Joe, I'm just going to play one more clip, yeah. Audio clip of him. And then we want to kind of wrap up and talk about his ending, which was kind of a bit sad. But we'll get into that and then talk about his final legacy.
Natural enthusiasm, that's the whole thing. It's the greatest thing in the world, natural enthusiasm. You're nothing without it. Nothing.
Now, how can you communicate that to people, though?
Well, I think that if a manager is honest and he has this natural enthusiasm, I think whilst he can't go into the field with the players, he can convey it to the players. You understand? He's with them and they're with him, and they'll be successful.
A manager who's a manager and his players are honest with him and he's honest with them, he can transmit his thoughts to them. And I'm certain I've headed some balls that were going into the net. I've kept them out.
Yeah.
And I've scored a few goals as well. So that I've willed somebody to do something, and I've done it.
Well, I'm hard on people that need to be hard on. For people who don't need to be hard on them, they're very opposite. So there's a balance, as you say. I mean, I think that if a man needs who's playing in front of the public is being well paid, and he doesn't dedicate himself to the job, I'd be hard on him. If I could, I'd put him in jail. Out the road, society, because he's a menace.
Classic Shankly there again, talking about natural enthusiasm and transmitting his thoughts to a player and making them do things on the pitch. Absolutely brilliant.
He said that he used to will the players to do something and they do it.
Yeah, absolutely. I've done that a few times with the Shamrocks, but they haven't done it. But, you know, it's an amazing story, but it kind of was a bit tragic at the end, somewhat. He decided to retire. He'd put his heart and soul into it for X amount of years. But it was a big shock to the whole of Liverpool. There's some amazing, actually, footage of people's reactions when he retired. They just couldn't believe it. Kids on the streets crying and so on. But it turned out that he probably retired too early because he couldn't really let go. And he was going back to the training ground a lot. And eventually, they kind of had to tell him to stop going back to the training ground because players were getting confused who was in charge. At that stage, Bob Paisley had taken over. And initially, Bob didn't want the job, apparently. He wanted Bill Shankly to keep it. But when Bill was adamant he was going to leave, Bob took it over. And I think it turned out that he ended up going down to the Everton training ground a lot just to play table tennis with the groundsman. But he really, really missed it. And it wasn't too long after that that he ended up dying of a heart attack. But they say he was kind of brokenhearted with the whole thing. Even though it was his decision, it was kind of tragic.
What possessed him to go down to the field, down to the grounds, and jump in with the lads and play a game of ball? It's funny. But what possessed him to do that?
But he just missed it, didn't he? And the problem was, you know, the players were still calling him boss. Yeah, sure, he wasn't the boss. And Alex Ferguson was very conscious of that. When he stepped down, he did a clean break, went to a few games, obviously. But, you know, he didn't overstep the mark with training and stuff like that.
He thought that he would have been asked to go on the board or become a director or remain involved in the club. And they never actually asked him. They actually asked him to leave when he did go down to the training ground and jump in and play. And then for many, many years, they were somewhat separated. A bit of a sad ending, but to me it's a bit confusing as to why he wasn't asked to stay on as part of the club, and to me it's even more confusing that he would go down to the ground, and then I hear him talk about, oh, he was so disappointed and that I wasn't asked. So I don't know what the circumstances are, what happened with him and the club there, but from what I can gather, I think Liverpool probably should have done a better job by keeping him involved. And yet, you're right, he did go over to Everton. He did spend time there. And as Bob Paisley said, he was trying to get as far away from football as he could. That's why he went to Everton. So, but look, there's no denying that his place is right now. It's been corrected. It's right in place where it should be in the history of the club. And I think most know just how big and he was, not only for the club but for the people of Liverpool. He was a champion. You know, one of the things that I found very interesting was when you look back at Shankly, and you look at his top team. A poll went out to name his top team. The likes of Ray Clemens was on it, Chris Lawler, Jerry Bourne, Tommy Smith, Ron Yates, Hughes, Kevin Keegan, Roger Hunt, Ian St. John, Peter Thompson, and Ian Callaghan. And a couple of dark horses in there, you know, unsung heroes. Jerry Bourne played in the 66 World Cup squad. You know, Ian Callaghan was in that squad as well. Roger Hunt, big household name, centre forward for England, 66 World Cup. And there's some massive players in there. Yates, Tommy Smith, hard man. But for me, Liverpool, for me, in this period, was Kevin Keegan. I loved watching Kevin Keegan play. I thought he was a fantastic footballer. He did some great stuff with John Toshack, the combination that they had, flicking the ball onto each other. And it's kind of like the last super player that Shankly was involved with.
He, of course, Keegan went on to manage England, the national team.
He did. He went on to manage Newcastle. He European Player of the Year a couple of times, went on to play in Germany. Well, in the FA Cup in 1974, when the game was over, Shankly came into the dressing room exhausted. He knew it was over. He knew it was coming near the end.
He was just burnt out, wasn't he?
Yeah, he needed to spend time with his family. He hadn't been on dates with his wife for 15 years. Yeah. I think they went on 3 dates or something. He was totally married to football. And when he was asked about that, he turned around and said, well, my wife is a very sensible woman, which is hilarious. Well, when he came back into the dressing room after that final, he kind of knew it was coming near the end. He wanted to get out on top. That was very important to him. And in the dressing room, I believe he claims that one player kind of was more aware of what he was going through at that time. He had his cup of tea and his pie. He was sitting down and he was letting the players enjoy themselves. And it was Keegan who he believes noticed that he was going through what he was going through, thinking of resigning. And sure enough, he resigned. 7 years later, he passed on. 1981, passed away. So it was a massive, massive loss, but.
He left the foundation there for Paisley, who came in and was massively successful. And that's a whole other story, Bob Paisley, how amazing he was. But the foundation was there. And, you know, Liverpool just wouldn't be what they are today without Bill Shankly. He's an absolute legend of the game. And that's why we wanted to do this show today. And over the course of time, we'll do a few more on different people like Brian Clough and so on. But Joe, thanks for coming today. Obviously, you have a great insight to so many things in the game, but I think it's important for our listeners, particularly the American ones, to get a sense of who these absolute legends are, because a lot of careers after them, players, managers, were influenced by these people. True legends of the game.
Look up Bill Shankly and you'll be inspired. And don't forget his mantra, pass, move and keep it simple.
Excellent. Thanks, Joe.
Storm. Hold your head up high and don't be afraid of the dark. At the end of a storm, there's a goal. And the sweet silver song of love.